All right, we'll call the meeting to order. It's nice to see everyone here with us today. Honorable board members, thank you so much for joining us on this September morning. And we will begin with a roll call.
She's moving herself, she's moving herself.
We will call this meeting to order now. And thank you for joining us on this August morning. It will soon be September, but we need every day in August, and so we do not want to miss a day. Would you please call the meeting, the roll, so we can call the determinant for it, please?
Trent Smith.
Carlicia Williams Bradley.
Here.
Estelle Hernandez.
Here.
Bill Flanagan.
Here.
Brian Gilbert.
Here.
Jennifer Mines.
Here.
Superintendent Collins.
Here.
Great, so we have a quorum, and it is good to see everyone with us today. And we can find the Open Meetings Act, just in case. Okay, board members, would you please join me? Before we do, I'll be asking you to rise for Pledge of Allegiance, salute to the Oklahoma flag, followed by a moment of silence. And while we do, I would just ask that everyone remember Judy Coons, who is an employee of ours, has been working here at the department for 27 years, and we lost her since we last met. And she is greatly missed, and we'll remember her during our moment of silence. All right, please stand.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I salute the flag of the state of Oklahoma, its symbols of peace unite all people.
Thank you, please be seated. All right, we have a lot of things to cover, so I'll ask for your attention and appreciate your patience going through a lot of different things to discuss. First, we really want to always celebrate those who have just done an incredible work serving the public, serving Oklahomans, serving our constituents. And today, Missy Korn, who is an alternative education specialist, doing incredible work, is here to be acknowledged for the Employee of the Month. I want to mention some things about Missy. And Missy, would you like to go to the podium for a moment, please? Thank you. And Missy began her work at the State Department of Education in 2017 in the role she currently holds. Prior to her time here, she worked as the Director of Alternative Education at Blackwell Public Schools. She was also a counselor and a technology teacher within that district as well. And Missy's nominator said that her passion, dedication, and commitment to ensuring our at-risk students have the same educational opportunities and resources as their general education peers is truly extraordinary. Missy has traveled the state providing alternative education directors, principals, teachers, and counselors insight into how to improve programs to better serve our state's most at-risk population of students to prevent dropouts from occurring and also to increase our graduation rates. Missy has also taken a mentorship role to facilitate smooth onboarding and provide valuable insight as to how we can better improve reporting and evaluation processes for our districts. Due to the pandemic, actually last year was a real challenge for all of us, however, Missy and her team accepted the challenge by converting in-person site visits to a virtual format while being able to still provide high quality feedback and assistance, which is really a tough task for this line of work when face-to-face interaction with staff and observing students in their actual environment are really important. So we also heard from educators who have worked with Missy. One in Catoosa said, anytime I had a question regarding anything, I emailed Missy Corn or called her, and she was always extremely prompt in getting back to me and very supportive. In fact, she says, I enjoyed the webinars that we had, and I can go and watch them at my convenience, which is also very helpful. So there's the silver lining. One in Cammon said, Missy Corn and other staff members do a great job helping to meet our concerns. This year, being what it is, I believe that they couldn't have done a better job in assisting me and our program when needed. And from Ponca City, we heard, Missy is wonderful. She is supportive and always quick to ask any questions that I send her. So congratulations to Missy. This is truly a well-deserved honor, and I am so grateful to be able to award you this. And now I'd like to recognize Nora Newenless. She is a grants associate in the Office of Federal Programs. Her colleagues are here as well. And Nancy, would you like to join the program? I'm sorry, Nora. I said Nancy because I saw Nancy Hughes when we walked in. I'm sorry, Nora.
My apologies, Nora.
I'd like to take a moment to recognize your service. And truly, it's been inspiring as you have served the state of Oklahoma. Nora started her service in 1996 in what was called the Fiscal Services Office at OSDE, and that office is now known as the Comptroller's Office. Nora worked as an Accounts Payable Administrative Assistant. She eventually transferred to the Administrative Assistant to the Executive Director of Fiscal Services. During that time, Nora was named OSDE's Telecommunications Liaison, worked with the Office of the State Finance to maintain and update the agency's phone lines. So it's a bit of history that's interesting for all of us to think about just all that's changed since then. In 2011, Nora began working in the Office of Federal Programs where she is today. And Nora, again, we are so very grateful for 25 years of service. This is truly, this is really a big part of Oklahoma's history, and you've been a part of it. And I want to applaud your service. And I know your team is here. Would you guys want to come and be in the picture? Come on over.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll take the photo, and then we'll get you that from Carrie. All right, come on over. Okay, there we go. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. It's been a real honor.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nora. It's pretty exceptional. Oh, speaking of exceptional, the Oklahoma Teacher of the Year joins our team in the school year during their tenure, during their term, and acts as an ambassador for teachers in Oklahoma. So Jessica Eschbach, the 2021 Oklahoma Teacher of the Year, is here with us. And would you like to go on the podium? And I will bring you this in just a second. Actually, Justin, why don't you, it's right here. Okay, we'll be good. I will hold it here. So here is this. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jessica as well. So her work actually started with us on July 1, and she will be spending the next 12 months speaking to groups, of educators about her experience partnering with the Oklahoma State Department of Education on a variety of projects and representing Oklahoma on a national level. And we are so proud of what we are able to showcase as Oklahoma educators on the national stage. So she will be competing, if you will, that's probably not the right word, adding more of colleagues in the process, but for the National Teacher of the Year program. And I have a resolution for you, and here's what it says. Whereas Oklahoma Teacher of the Year Jessica Eschbach is a stellar example of quality education in Oklahoma as demonstrated by her dedication and devotion to students and her deep knowledge of the art and science of teaching. And whereas Jessica Eschbach, in her capacity as an innovative learning coach of pre-K through 12th graders at Norman Public Schools, develops confidence in each student's ability, sets high expectations for her students and for herself, and promotes active involvement in her students' learning and in her own. And whereas she consistently exceeds expectations in teaching and in return earns the profound respect and admiration of students, parents, and educators. Whereas Jessica will serve as Oklahoma's ambassador for teaching for the 2021-22 school year, sharing her knowledge and unique experiences with fellow and prospective educators while promoting education as a profession. And whereas the Oklahoma State Department of Education believes the future of our state depends on every child having the opportunity to achieve academic excellence, and wishes to commend and express gratitude to those who devote their lives to the education of the future generations. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the State Superintendent of Public Instruction and the State Board of Education do honor Jessica Eschbach and offer our congratulations on her selection as Oklahoma's Teacher of the Year and official ambassador for teaching for the 2021-22 school year. Congratulations. Jessica, we would love to hear a little from you. If you want to just address the board, and we'll also take a photo.
Okay,
so let's do that too. Okay, very good. And we'll, I'll hold this. I'll hold it. Okay. All right.
I just want to thank all of you for allowing me this opportunity to represent teachers and to work to make sure that every single student in the state of Oklahoma has every opportunity to succeed. I know that that's your goal, and I am a partner with you on that, and I can't wait to see where this journey takes me. And I hope to make Oklahoma teachers proud in the national competition, but also continue outreach and support to make sure that every teacher has what they need to serve our kids. So thank you so much for the chance to be here, and I look forward to working with all of you for the next year. Yeah. And if you need me, email me. I'm here. I'd love to work with all of you. Thank you so much.
Okay, then also thank you again. Thank you so much. In a little bit, board members, we will actually go. So that will be coming after our superintendent remarks. But very good to have you. Thank you so much for being here and with us today. So board members, another thing to share with you, you have, I believe, copies of these in front of you. They're also available for the public online. And it is our probably largest, most voluminous ever, the 2021 legislative red banner book, is what this is called. So this includes a record number of legislative bills that passed into laws that impact Oklahoma from just this last session. In fact, not all of them are included in the summary. There are some at the very end that are also impacting education that have been listed as well. So I think that we have in this book, we are featuring 100 bills. 100 bill summaries that serve as a resource on the latest edition for our past legislative session, and our school people all refer to that. And it's available for you too to have just a little brief update on what all of these bills are that are now passed into law, impacting schools. Then also, board members, let me just, speaking of laws and rules, et cetera, let me just move into an update I need to share with you. We learned yesterday that for technical reasons, we will need to revote on the rules for House Bill 1775. There were technical errors in the draft rules, the result of a regrettably rushed and a little unorthodox process. At any rate, we were instructed yesterday to withdraw an electronic version of the rules from the Secretary of State site, correct the Scrivener's errors, and then resubmit the corrected version. Unfortunately, that turned out to be faulty advice, as the site was just unable to accept the corrected version because too much time had lapsed since the original approval of those rules. So we will remedy that by having a special board meeting to reconsider that. In the meantime, districts do need to follow the rule as guidance until that is completed, and since there will be no changes to it other than that. And at that special board meeting, board members, just to update you, we will plan to also hire our new board attorney, so please be looking for emails for scheduling that special meeting in the next few days or coming weeks. Okay, so now I do need to talk about you know, what should be an exciting time going back to school, but it's a time where it's actually been there are good things and some tragedies that have occurred. Just in fact, this morning I learned of an eighth grader that has passed away with COVID. Mm-hmm. And we learned that a couple days ago, and we were in Grove where they had just lost a teacher to COVID. So sadly, this is where I think we were all hoping we would not be. Yet we know that the Delta variant is surging throughout communities, and schools are no exception to that. Already many districts are seeing hundreds of positive cases, and in some cases, thousands of students and staff are quarantined. At the same time, we know from experience in the last year and a half, that it is vital for our children to be able to be in person. And so we are so grateful for school districts that are working with their community to work on the importance of following quarantine guidance that comes from the health department, and following the rules on isolation, the importance of testing students, particularly, and staff, particularly those who might think they just have a cold or allergies. Those can be symptoms of COVID and the Delta variant. So we have to stay vigilant. We know that some of our schools are demonstrating opportunities that are still within the law. Senate Bill 658 is a law that prohibits certain things that were possible last year. However, as long as there is a parent opt-out process, there is still the ability for a superintendent or a school district to require masks, but with that opt-out. And that is at least giving those who are unvaccinated a fighting chance at protection. So we are grateful for all the work that's happening in schools right now. And we know that there are 640,000 students currently who are either too young to be vaccinated, or they haven't yet taken that that option. So doing everything within our power to protect them and keep them in a place where schools can stay open is of utmost importance, but the most important thing is protecting their health and well-being. So we just want to take a moment to recognize where we are right now and how this is not like last year. It might feel like deja vu, but the Delta variant is so much more contagious, and we just need to take it very, very seriously. All right, so as we think about last year and the gap in some of the continuity and then learning potential gaps, in May, you'll remember that we launched Ready Together Oklahoma, an action plan for supporting schools through the pandemic and beyond. I am proud to say that the recovery plan has grown immensely since that launch. Tiffany Neal, who is our Deputy Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, has helped curate a guide and on the website called Ready Together. And I'd like her to give you a quick overview and a look at it to offer both for the public, but for schools and leaders and families as well. So Tiffany, I'm gonna toss this to you and just let you kind of show this, how to navigate and what is here. And then I'm gonna talk about a few things as well. Welcome.
We still have the mouse there, right?
Yeah, it's not doing it, Sarah.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeremy. Good morning, honorable members of the board and Superintendent Hoffmeister. It is a pleasure to share with you the space where we're housing our Oklahoma Ready Together support structures for our state. Ready Together Oklahoma really is based on a two-pronged approach to support for schools, communities, and families, all in an effort to help certainly our students who have been impacted by disruptions in learning from COVID over the last 18 months or so. With the two-pronged approach, what we're doing is offering guidance to school districts, communities, and families, as well as resources, so they can do work in their local context to support students. The second part of the two-pronged approach is really about the statewide initiatives that we're hoping serve as gap fillers in these communities, which Superintendent will speak of in just a moment. We really look to see these initiatives make that statewide long-term impact that we're hopeful for. If you were to go to the website, you will notice that our efforts are really based around five categories of this support: student learning and success, prioritizing health and well-being, ensuring equity for all, engaging families and communities, and supporting teachers and leaders. I'm going to go into one of these categories so you can see where we have started to post guidance documents with embedded resources for schools, families, and communities on a variety of topics we believe will have high impact for students who have been impacted by COVID-19. So here we see a couple of documents. This summer, we put out several guidance documents to really support summer learning and summer physical education support and social emotional learning support. So if you were to click on this particular document, how can student learning be supported at home during the summer? It's a quick two-page document with embedded guidance and resources for families on how they could have supported student learning at home during the summer. Of course, this guidance document and all of the guidance documents, we hope and we have designed to be applicable for the following school year, summer, and far beyond. So it doesn't just apply to this year. I'm going to go back for just a moment and showcase that many of the guidance documents also will be translated for those guidance documents that are really speaking directly to families, and we see an example here. I'll show you one other category just to give you a little bit of insight into how these guidance documents have been designed and prepared. Here under student learning and success, we can see there's a guidance document that's really speaking to schools and educators about how they can support students' mathematics learning with accelerated learning. So what are those strategies you can utilize to stay on grade level learning for mathematics while also going back and addressing unfinished learning from the past year? All of the documents are designed with the same sort of structure in mind, two pages, we hope easy to read, the resources and guidance embedded in these documents. And then the second part of the two-pronged approach, which I mentioned earlier, is really around the initiatives, the statewide initiatives. So if we scroll up, we can get to the statewide initiatives by going a little further up. Sorry about that. There we go. Right here to this section, And you'll see all of the statewide initiatives here and information about the statewide initiatives. And Superintendent Hoffmeister, I believe you're going to speak about some that we just recently introduced.
Yeah, so we've released several major initiatives in our Ready Together Oklahoma plan in the last 6 weeks, and there'll be more added. First, the OSDE has committed to using, and just so everyone kind of has a framework of what are these dollars? Of all of the federal relief funds that were provided, there were three tranches of funds. 10% of that is part of the state set aside. In the last, and 90% of that goes directly to the school districts. So what we're talking about is part of the state set aside, that 10%, and how that those funds are going to be used to help enhance and extend the work that the districts are already doing or need to do, and we can partner with them on areas that we see are in need. So this is an example. Our commitment to use 12.75 million in federal relief funding to pay for eligible student teachers. So this is a partnership with the Oklahoma State Higher Education Regents, and it is believed to be the first time, we understand we are the first state in the country to do this work with compensating their teachers through these relief funds. Part of the funds are to, how do you make sure that we have teachers for students? And this is one of our ways of solving this. So over the next 3 years, the initiative will provide $3,250 payments to an estimated 1,300 qualified student teachers per year enrolled at an Oklahoma college and university, and it will help provide for them what they need to be able to complete the program. So we know that we need more teachers that are coming out of colleges of education with that mentoring opportunity, and that they are ready to go on day one. But many people stop going to, if they are not completing their degrees, because they can't afford the 15 weeks to be out of work. They are working to support their own family, to keep a roof over their head. They may be a non-traditional student. And so the colleges of education identified a couple of years back, when we started our teacher shortage task force, that this was a barrier for completing the program and helping to grow the workforce. So that is one, and I will let you know that we're starting with the week one of those student teachers. They'll get $1,625, and then the final payment of $1,625 will be paid when they sign a contract, starting with the school district in Oklahoma. So we believe that this is going to be a big win. We know this is something that districts could do, but we had a barrier as well that had to be overcome in statute last year that would allow that to start right away. And we're helping make this possible. We're working directly with the colleges of education through higher ed. Another initiative we're also investing in fact, these are all items that may be included in your packet or that we'll get for you if you'd like, or go to the website. And this is the science of reading. So we're investing $13 million in federal funds in the new Oklahoma Science of Reading Academies. The academies will offer no-cost professional development to 10,000 kindergarten through third grade teachers over the next 3 years. The teachers will spend 2 years studying the research-based language essentials for teachers of reading and spelling, which we call letters. And it focuses on the science of reading, which uses evidence-based research for overcoming struggles in reading and ensures that our teachers have the kind of training that they need that is the latest in science and cognitive development. And with the ability for functional MRIs to be utilized with those studies that started in the 2000s, that has really changed what we know about how the brain and what we can do to overcome dyslexia for children. So this will have a long-lasting impact on not just this year or the next few while we have these funds, but for the full career of that teacher, and hundreds of children will be impacted by just that one teacher having that additional training and support over his or her career. Also, we are proud to announce that just the other day, I think 2 days ago, was it? We announced this week $4.2 million grant awarded for Teach for America. And they will recruit, train, and help retain teachers in Oklahoma classrooms. This is different than our line item, Teach for America, piece that brings in new teachers into Oklahoma schools. This is actually going back into a pool of up to 60,000 teachers nationwide and recruiting experienced teachers back into the classroom in Oklahoma. And so this will not only be those teachers, but also tutors and I believe even some district leadership. So this is really a huge injection of additional people into the Oklahoma workforce with Oklahoma education being the big benefit. We're very excited about this as well. Finally, I want you to know that through the Ready Together Oklahoma initiative, the YMCA was one of the recipients when we launched these 16 community outreach sites that are providing no cost or heavily subsidized childcare and summer youth development programming for kids in the community. You might remember this was kind of the first initiative that we launched with that before and after, the summer school piece, which will also during the school year be before and after. So we wanted to visit one of the programs here in Oklahoma City downtown and see how they are helping our children with learning loss over the summer. And they continue this work year round as well. And we'll be awarding additional monies that total up to $30 million, both for summer learning and for wraparound services in the before and after care through our grant program that is out right now. Justin, can you show us? We'll just pause for just a moment. There we go. Thank you.
We're here for the community. It enables parents to have peace of mind and know their kiddos are having a fun time. They're safe and well cared for. I love seeing how excited team members are when they get dropped off.
If this program wouldn't have existed, I would have lost my job, which I would have lost my home, and this has really saved me.
No child is ever turned away from our programs due to an inability to pay. So with the assistance that we received from this Department of Ed, we were able to match those dollars with dollars that we raise in the community every year and providing a space for them to continue to learn and grow and thrive, to help with academic achievement gap, summer learning loss.
Through the state's Ready Together Oklahoma initiative, that has enabled us to launch 16 community outreach sites that are providing no cost or heavily subsidized childcare and summer youth development programming for kids in our communities. Today, you'll see our campers doing a STEM activity, a group game, and see our leadership camp during their swim time. Our summer programming is all about academic enrichment and social emotional learning while also having those physical activities.
He's doing things that I've never thought he could do. He knows how to swim now. He is more social. He also has autism. So, you know, those are struggles for him, and I was concerned with that different ability. However, the YMCA has provided great services for him.
A number of school districts have opened their doors to allow YMCA programs to operate within the school facilities. A school district might provide summer school programming in the morning, and then the Y comes in after lunch and provides the enrichment and fun activities.
I never really knew how much the YMCA really did for the community, but during a pandemic, it really, really helped me out a lot.
All right. We thank Craig Gaglio, who filmed all of that, and will continue to bring you updates with these initiatives. We're very excited about them. We're not finished, but we are rolling out as fast as we can, and it's an exciting time. All right, yes?
On the Teach for America piece, that was a grant, right?
All of these are grants.
Okay, so was that made? Help me understand how the application process, was it on SD? How did that work?
It's just a priority of mine, and we did that.
Okay, so there wasn't an application?
No.
Okay, all right.
No. Now that's a grant we're awarding them.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Yeah, just like we did with YMCA.
Okay, all right.
And how we are doing with some of the others. Now, there is a competitive grant that's in process right now for after-school programs. And so so there's a mixture, but they're all grants.
Thank you. Yes, thanks.
Okay. Very good. All right. Now, board members, if you will look at our first action item, which is 4. Excuse me, 4A, discussion of possible action on the minutes from the June 24th, 2021 regular board meeting. Is there any, is there a motion or?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, Ms. Caldwell.
Mr. Smith.
Yep, you can.
Ms. Williams, present.
Aye.
Ms. Fernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Aye.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Nunes.
Aye.
Superintendent.
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Now we have discussion of possible action on the minutes for the July 12th regular State Board of Education meeting. Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
All right, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Questions? All right, seeing none, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Williams, present.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Abstain.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Nunes.
Aye.
Superintendent Marston.
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Now, the resolution that I read earlier, as we recognized Jessica Eschbach, to recognize her as the 2021 Teacher of the Year. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Excellent. Any comments or discussion or questions?
I appreciate her, and I am going to give her my contact information because I'd like to work with her. She offered that up, so love to get out and help any way I can and learn. So thanks for what you're doing.
This is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, the greatest award I ever received in my football career was an award that my teammates in college gave me. Totally voted on by them. It's a broken down trophy in my game room now, but I cherish that thing. My kids have destroyed it, but I guess that's a really cool thing.
It's fantastic. And you are a role model for teachers now all over the state. So we are grateful. All right, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Aye.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Nunes.
Aye.
Superintendent Marston.
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. Now, is there any public comment? Okay, no public comment today. Board members, we are moving to item 6, which is the consent docket.
I have some questions.
Yes. All right, Mr. Piper.
As tradition would have it.
Indeed.
I just have a couple, actually. On the abbreviated school day for alternative education, can you remind me? I thought that there was a minimum of 4 hours and 15 minutes that were required. And it looks like two of the programs listed here are going less than that amount of time. Do you have any insight into that?
I do, Ms. Mons. So the deregulation, the waiver is asking to be able to serve students less than that minimum of 4 hours and 15 minutes a day, or 756 hours on the year. And so what the ask is that we would like to serve them less than that due to reasons that are listed within each of those applications. Sometimes it is that we are doing a nightly program due to work schedules. Sometimes it is that we are accommodating them just getting in the career tech system and those types of things. Trying to go after some of those certifications and things of that nature. And so that is the ask that is before you as far as abbreviated day.
Okay. I guess my broader question is, and I'm just looking for your insight, honestly, of, you know, these students arguably need more help, need additional kind of wraparound services. And I understand and appreciate a lot of them are, you know, taking into account that these are students who have to work or students who need a night program or something alternative. I don't know, I struggle with a program that's asking to go 3 hours and 30 minutes a day for 4 days a week. And as you know, I didn't get a chance to read all of these, but is that common? I mean, I guess my question is that like going that few of hours, is that anything that's concerning?
Well, I think that the concern is something that is overseen by our alternative education program, and they look at the efficacy of this type of program, and that's something with Ms. Petra Woodard and her group, Ms. Corn, that was here before you earlier today, that they examine on a regular basis, as well as my regional accreditation officers looking at how effective these programs are, looking at graduation rates, as well as testing scores and those types of things. And so ultimately, I think that there are a lot of different things that work for a lot of different schools in a lot of different ways. And I do think that examining how effective that is with some of these measuring sticks that I've just mentioned, I think that is probably of the utmost importance. And if they found something that works for them and for their students, mm-hmm. that they're comfortable with and are being effective, I think I am okay with that ask.
Okay. I mean, I agree with that, so.
Yeah, I ask a question about that. You talked earlier about those that were asking for something below the 4 hour and change, okay. And you mentioned the number of days per school year. So are those that are asking for the exemption asking, saying we'll go less during the day, but more days? Or are they just doing less per day and just hitting the minimum days?
So this, much like our traditional schools that have the 1,080 hours mm-hmm. option, alternative education schools have 756, which comes out with math on 4 hours and 15 minutes. And
gotcha.
So the ask is that they have not met that 756. And
okay.
please know that the math is done on every single one of these tasks to see how many total hours that we're talking about. And that anything that were just absolutely out of left field as far as the minimal amount have been sent back and asked to be redone and reconsidered.
And also, just to put into context, these are, they are ones with students under 10, right? 10 students. No.
That's a different deregulation and waiver, Ms. Fernandez.
I think it's wrong.
This one is strictly for the amount of time. There is a co-op agreement and a rule and regulation that if you're serving less than 10 students,
yeah.
you are supposed to co-op with a neighboring district. That is another deregulation that we've seen. I believe we have some later on.
I do think, to Mr. Smith's point, I think on Little Axe it says 3 hours and 30 minutes. According to their application, it's 4 hours and 30 minutes.
This is 4 hours, not less than 4 hours per day. And then this says 3 hours and 30 minutes, 4 days per day.
Well, and in their application, it says alternative time between 1 and 5:30 p.m.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Three different times. We can absolutely do some clarification on that.
It's okay. I just, yeah, no, that's fine. The only other question I had was on cooperative agreements, and I know you may not have had the opportunity to do this yet. I would like to know how many districts actually do co-op for alternative. Unless you do know that off the top of your head, if you could just get me that number, I'd be curious of how many actually do it. And the reason I ask is because the Bowlegs, normally a lot of these are, we have to travel 30 miles to the nearest school district, which I totally understand, and it makes absolute sense why it doesn't make sense to co-op. In the Bowlegs application, it said that their nearest school was 8 miles away. And they outlined some reasons for it, and so I'm still recommending that we approve it. I just, to me, the point, I'm guessing, the point of these co-op situations is to try and save money among school districts that are close to one another. It seemed like this was one that was close to other school districts, so it may make sense for them to co-op. So I'm just curious what that total number is of school districts that actually do it.
Okay. Let me make sure.
Wait, I don't want to interrupt.
You go ahead,
okay.
Because I want to make sure.
Thank you. So can I switch over to the library and media specialist piece?
Sure.
Forgive me, I know we've talked about this before, but I'm still, when I look at really what they're asking for in the exemption, tell me if this is right. they're saying, we don't have the library credentialing, and we need you, it's almost like an emergency, sir, I'm a teacher, correct? Okay. So when I look at somebody like Edmond, which is one of our top five largest school districts, and it shows here the students, they serve well over 23,000, and they don't have somebody with credentialing, that's a concern to me. And I'm sure it's not because they don't have the budget for it. So I'm tempted to pull that so we can find out more, but I want to ask you before I request that, you know much about this particular exemption request with Edmond Memorial and Redbud?
I do. I actually made a personal phone call to their leadership there at Edmond because there was one application that was significantly different for the rest and needed more information. But I think this is similar to, you mentioned the emergency certification, and I think that's a fantastic example or comparison because there are finding certified folks in those areas is incredibly difficult. The more rural, the harder, and it's just one of those things that this is a workaround to, as far as the certification is concerned, but not necessarily a workaround on the quality of the people that they're employing. Edmond, I thought, did a fantastic example of supporting documentation of what programs that these folks have gone through to help prepare them to be effective in the library with their students. And so, absolutely, whatever recommendation the board sees fit, we will go back to them, request more information, whatever they would need, or that you would need to feel comfortable with that.
I read both of those. It remind me if I'm wrong, but I think both of them were, the people who were going through the program were 1 year away from getting their master's degree in both instances in library.
Okay, that was my next question.
So,
are they
I
on
think
the pathway?
Yes. They are.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay, then that's.
I think it's they have people who they really like from this.
I
agree that the application was good, and that they had people that were really good, and they're just 1 year shy. I think each of them were 1 year shy of their actual certification.
Right. Perfect. Thanks for answering that.
Yes, sir.
I will move to approve the consent docket.
Second.
All right. Motion and second. Any other discussion or questions? Okay, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Brighton?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Superintendent Holmes?
Aye. All right, very good. Thank you for all your attention to the details. Now, item 7, legal services. So we have a series of items that we will take one at a time. So the first, I'll ask if it is advised that we move into executive session for discussion of possible action to discuss Western Heights Independent School District, as well as their Mannix Farms, relating to litigation involving those entities. And
so moved.
Second.
Are we discussing all of these together, or are we coming
in, coming out each time? Well, that is one item, and then we will potentially take action, and then we'll have to.
I think either option is doable. It's up to the board how you want to do it.
We can go into the room and then come out and not go back into the room.
In past, correct. Just what we did last time.
Questions from the public about, you know, how long were you in on this
different
item?
Subjects.
And so, in the interest of transparency,
I can certainly
do. we could do it one at a time and come back, or
Brad, if that's cleaner and you feel better about it, then let's do that.
In the interest of transparency, I'm sure we could send it here, bring it out, and
come on,
let me do that.
Okay. Good question. So
we have a motion and a second to move in.
Because this is about litigation, let's do the second.
Yeah. I agree.
Right now. And so please don't roll.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Brighton?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Superintendent
Holmes? Aye. All right. We will actually meet and go into another location so that everyone else is able to stay where you are, and we'll return to consider the rest of the agenda. Who is, oh, John, himself. All right. All right, board members, we're assembling back from out of executive session, but in order to do so, we need to make a motion to come out of executive session.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the roll.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brighton?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
Ms. Williams?
Aye.
Mr. Superintendent Thomas?
Aye. All right, we are coming out from executive session. And now I would also like to identify those who were in executive session with us. We have members of the OSDE legal team, also Chief of Staff Phil Backrack, Deputy Chief of Staff Carolyn Thompson, as well as Representative Mark McBride. And let the record reflect that there are no votes taken during executive session. Now, at this time, I would ask if there is any action to take.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion. For a lot of reasons that just are infuriating to me and to members of this board and the department as a whole, I'd like to make a motion to formally call on the president of the Western Heights School Board, Robert Everman, to resign immediately. For a million reasons, not the least of which are his incestuous business relationship with former Superintendent Mannix Barnes, his blatant disregard for use of taxpayer dollars. I question why Western Heights needs twice as many attorneys as the entire State Department of Education. There are unbelievably, which we could be here all day talking about all the other reasons why, but I would also like to call on the parents and the stakeholders of the Western Heights School District to continue to put as much pressure on Mr. Everman as possible. He is a scorn on your school district and a cancer in your midst, and he needs to be removed as soon as possible. I only regret that we can't do more today.
I'll second that.
All right, thank you. Board members, we have a motion and a second. Ms. Hernandez, any other comments or any questions, discussion? All right, seeing none, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brighton?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Mendes?
Aye.
Superintendent Thomas?
Aye. And that is unanimous by the State Board of Education in that motion and request. Now, board members, we have another item that would be item 7B, yes, and item 7C to consider, and I would, and also item 7D. These are related to item B, Minica Public Schools, item C, the possible action on teacher certificates for Aaron Hernandez and Bart Daniel, and item 7D, the certificate, teacher certification on Ronald Arthur. And I would recommend that we go into executive session to consider these items.
So moved.
Second.
All right, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brighton?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Mendes?
Aye.
Superintendent Thomas?
Aye. Very good. All right, that motion carries. We are in executive session to discuss these matters. sometimes.
Mainly by.
All right, we are returning from executive session. Please let the record reflect that during that time, no votes were taken, and we had legal counsel in the room as well as chief of staff, Phil Bacharach, and deputy chief of staff, Carolyn Thompson, and deputy, first deputy state superintendent, Robin Miller, who is our Title IX officer for the state.
I make a motion to return to regular session.
Second. Thank you. And please call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Aye.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Menes.
Aye.
Aye. All right, we are back. And then the first thing to consider. The first thing to consider is item 7B, Minnetonka Public Schools. I do want it known that we are very closely following this. We have been on site investigating through our legal office, through our Title IX investigation as well. The state board is preparing to take the next steps regarding accreditation for the school district, as well as other potential certification suspensions or revocations. And we updated the board on that process during executive session. But while we are unable to take specific action today due to that process and those procedures and timelines that are required in statute, we still feel it's important to address the general public and the community of Minnetonka that we hear them, and we are supportive of all those who have been in any way harmed, that they come forward, and that we also want to ensure that there is a culture that openly investigates any type of report or allegation. It takes that very seriously. Are there any comments before we move to the next item?
Yes, I'd like to just echo what you said, and the board has taken it very seriously, as you mentioned, Jordan. Horrible situation for any of those that have been victimized. And there is obviously a pending investigation. Next steps will be coming. We're taking this very, very seriously to help protect those in that community.
All right, then we will move to the item 7C, which is discussion of possible action to revoke the teacher certifications for Aaron Hernandez and Bart Daniel.
So moved. Second.
All right, we have a motion and second. Any comments, questions? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Aye.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Menes.
Aye.
Superintendent Menes.
Aye. The next item is item 7D, discussion of possible action regarding the emergency suspension of the teaching certificate for Ronald Arthur, and we are making a recommendation to suspend.
Is that motion?
Second.
All right, there is a motion and second. And any comments or questions? Please call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Williams Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
No.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Menes.
Aye.
Superintendent Menes.
Aye. All right, that motion carries. And now I would ask if there is a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second. All in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
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 Aye. I think that's unanimous. It is certainly a majority.
Yeah.
So we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay.